Welcome to season two of Young Valley Leaders, where we feature the upcoming movers and shakers in your backyard and our community, making a difference for themselves. I'm your host, Lewis Holzman, and I'm here today with Sarah Clark.
Hi, Lewis. I'm here in the Lehigh Valley's backyard recording an amazing podcast. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for taking the time here in Southside Bethlehem at WDIY 88.1. We're really excited to have you here. I'm really excited to have you here. It's been a few years since we got to catch up in actual person, right? And so before we, you know, started the recording here, we were preambling a little bit about just what's happening in the creative world. And you're making a big impact here in the Lehigh Valley and beyond through your work with Kudu Creative, an agency you founded almost 12 years ago.
Yeah, 12 years ago.
Wow, time flies.
It does.
So I'm really looking forward to learning a little bit more about your experience there as a creative, as an entrepreneur, small business owner, the impact you're making here in Easton and the community at large, but even beyond that. But also, like, what took you there? And how did you get to not only founding Kudu, but to the Lehigh Valley, right? You're not from here, correct?
No, I'm from Elmira, New York, okay. Upstate New York.
Yeah, so it's incredible when we're able to find leaders that have found the Lehigh Valley and have decided to call it home. And sometimes that's equally as intriguing to me about why, being someone that's from here lifelong and has seen some of the development over the last 30, 40 years in that way. It's great to get that outside perspective. So thanks for taking the time to come in here and, you know, let's jump right in. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe a little bit of your background, but then, you know, what you're most excited about as you started to form Kudu and bring your family here?
Yeah, sure. So, like I said, I'm from upstate New York, Elmira, New York, which is the Finger Lakes region. I went to a community college there to figure out what it was that I wanted to do. I originally went to school thinking I wanted to be a physical therapist because I loved science, and anatomy and physiology was like my favorite class in high school. So I was doing a lot of science-heavy courses, and then I took just a graphic design class. I didn't know that it existed. I really didn't even know what it was. And then one of the assignments was to Photoshop yourself doing something. So I ran track and cross country in high school, so I had this photo of me hurdling. So I Photoshopped myself out of that, and then I superimposed it over the Grand Canyon, and I got a really good grade on it, and I was like...
You make the leap?
Yeah, I was like, so you're telling me I can make a career out of Photoshopping whatever comes to mind and putting it into a scenario that might be reality? Okay. But really, that class, I wouldn't say was branding or a deep dive into marketing or graphic design in and of itself. But it was enough to hook me and switch my major. And then I wasn't sure what school to go to after I figured out what I wanted to do after community college. So I didn't really want to go to New York City, and I didn't want to go to L.A. Unfortunately, I couldn't afford SCAD, though that would have been my first choice. Beautiful campus, wonderful library. So I went to Minnesota State University, and they produced a lot of notable designers that worked in Minneapolis, usually the North Loop. They have a bunch of creative and interactive agencies, branding firms. So I went there, enjoyed my time there, learned a lot, was supported by a ton of creatives. It really means a lot when you have the support of other people that are also in the industry that want to see you grow. You know, they take the time to review your portfolio, to poke holes in it, so that you get the notes and the feedback so that you go back to your computer and continuously improve your designs. Mm. So once I was ready to do an internship, that's what I did. I actually utilized LinkedIn way back, right? Nice. Before it, you know, is used how it is today. And set up a bunch of interviews with a bunch of mostly like branding firms and creative shops, just asking them if they would review my portfolio. And I got feedback from a lot of just really wonderful, notable designers. And I did my internship at Capsule Design, which is in the North Loop of Minneapolis. Some of their clients were Smart Wool, Red Wing Shoe, Outdoor Research. So just a lot of really cool brands I got to work on. Mm-hmm. And I was surrounded by just amazing designers that I was just like, wow, tell me everything you know. Like, how can I hone my skills with the time I'm here, you know, to then really improve my craft. And I did, and I graduated on a Monday or on a Friday and got a full-time position that was actually created for me at a full-service marketing advertising agency in Fargo, North Dakota, called Flint Communications. And they were interesting in that they had two sides to their business. One side was agriculture, so creating marketing materials for like Doosan, Bobcat, John Deere, all those major agricultural brands.
Which makes a ton of sense for that area.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Lots of acreage out there in the Midwest.
Yeah.
Bread basket of the nation for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and then the other side was commercial, right? So what we typically know when we think of marketing. So any sort of digital ads, print ads that had to be created for businesses, whether they be malls or, you know, clothing brands, just more of your commercial industry. It's a funny story, actually. I was interviewing for the same position as another graphic designer. His name is Alex, and he graduated a year before me. He also did a really good internship at Fallon, I believe it was, in Minneapolis, which is another really great advertising agency. So we both interviewed for the same position, and he ended up getting the position. And then they called me in and they said, well, you didn't get the position you applied for, but we really liked you. So we created a new position and it's print and web instead of just web design. Hmm. And so I took it. I was like, yeah, sure. I can do both. Let's do both.
Yeah.
And I reported to two creative directors. I reported to the more traditional print, like branding creative director, and then the all digital creative director. I don't think I could have asked for better bosses on my first job. They taught me so much. They were compassionate. They were good leaders, and they really taught me a lot. And it's funny because I sat next to Alex, even though he was hired for the position that I applied for. So we had this like fun rhetoric going back and forth. And I told him he stole my job, and then he would call me over to look at his designs, and he would say, don't tell anybody this, but I'm colorblind. Can you check out my colors to make sure they're okay? And I was like, if I tell our boss, you're going to be out of a job. So, like, we would just joke around. So
that's pretty incredible for him, though, to be able to, you know, move forward in a design career and having that handicap.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, or improve it, right? Because yeah. Websites, you know, ADA compliant, that's you true. Have to build for accessibility for everybody, no matter how you interact with that. So actually, it was probably good because he was the test of the opposite side, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point.
So my time there was really, really fun. I couldn't have asked for a better beginning to a creative career. And then I had my boys, Emmett and Eli, 13 and 16, which are my best designs to this day, while I was out there and during college. And my ex-husband at the time was looking for a job. And I had gotten enough experience after I got my degree. So I said, let's move back to the East Coast so we can be closer to our family. My parents weren't retired at the time, so they only got to see, you know, their grandkids like twice a year.
Sure.
And I grew up with my grandparents being heavily involved in my life. So for me, it was very important for my family. And he looked over on the East Coast and he found Easton Hospital, which is no longer. So he was a marketing director over there. And I said, well, let's go check out Easton. I want to see what the vibe is and, you know, if it's a community that we're going to uproot our family and move to, because I don't want to move to several different places. So we visited Easton and we explored the Lehigh Valley and I immediately fell in love with it. I was just, it had enough grit, it had enough character, and it was also like locationally ideal. You know,
sure.
3 hours from where I'm from, my parents could come down for the weekend and spend time with the grandkids. If I wanted to go anywhere in the world, we have 3 international airports within an hour's drive. Everything about this area just really spoke to me. So I was totally comfortable with making that decision to move to Easton. And I would make that decision over again to this day.
Well, we're certainly happy you made that decision and happy to have you and your family here.
Thanks.
I mean, I got to imagine since when you toured Easton 12, 15-ish years ago, whatever that was, it's even evolved and changed since then. I mean, arguably, like, the most up-and-coming renaissance of all the three downtowns in the Lehigh Valley. An incredible food scene, certainly a great arts and music scene over there, along with just, like, the general increase of a younger demographic that seems to be pretty active in the community. It seems like you're a part of that outside of just with the Nkudu as well and your family. What makes you feel like Easton is home continually to, you know, do it all over again?
Because I liked it and I placed my roots there. You know, I was all in from the start. So when I came to Easton, I didn't know anybody. And so I wanted to meet people and kind of find a community that I could be a part of and identify with. And I volunteered for Easton Main Street Initiative. Kim Kometz and Amy Baccadoro were leading the charge. And they had a group of maybe like four volunteers, Jim Nicknick, Anthony Marancini. There was just a bunch of us and a couple other names I'm not mentioning. Sorry, guys. But so we would meet, you know, a couple times a month and figure out how to bring more people to downtown Easton, because they had a stigma to disprove. Because, I mean, since I moved here, it wasn't like this. But lore from the past is that Easton was also known as the Little Apple for a few different reasons. And most of them very unfavorable.
Sure.
You know, lots of crime, prostitution, drugs, all of that.
Sure.
So people were saying how residents that lived in Bethlehem or Allentown were afraid to come to Easton because they still thought that it was like it was back in the 90s. And me, as an outsider just moving there, I was like, are you kidding me? This place is completely safe. Yeah. Like, so yeah, there was a little bit of identity crisis and a stigma that Easton had to work through. So volunteering on the Easton Main Street Initiative, our initial goal was to help retail in downtown Easton, because a lot of the retail locations on like the first floors of the buildings were vacant. You know, there were a few that were small businesses, but we wanted to really fill out all of those properties, right? Because that was a shoe in the door to get people to come to Easton, right? With unique boutique shops.
Yep.
The restaurant scene in Easton was always healthy for the most part. We didn't have as many as we do now, but we started with a bunch that...
Some are still there.
...was the major draw, yeah. So we kind of filled it out because we wanted to elevate retail as well, so that we have retail and then we also have restaurant scenes, right? So Jim and I created a website that was just like very basic, and we took all the businesses, mostly retail, created a logo, Shop Downtown Easton. Jim spun up the website. I then laid it out, and Amy and Kim gave us all the information for all the local like retail shops, if they had a website. A lot of them didn't have a website because they're small businesses, but they did have a Facebook page. So we used whatever link they had to direct traffic to check them out. And it just, I mean, if I could say, it started with a simple Shop Downtown Easton website, and then we just started building from there. We would do campaigns for around the holidays to get people to shop in downtown Easton. There was Spring Into Easton, which was a, you know, spring retail campaign. So, and then we have the peace candle lighting during the holiday season that we also had to promote, that was really big, and it meant a lot to people in Easton. But as a whole, we wanted to share it with the entire valley, so it needed a little bit of visibility. So I just met a lot of people volunteering my time and made some good work during that time. And then Megan McBride, who was running the Easton Farmers Market at the time, had asked me to help her out with a couple simple small projects like T-shirts to sell and updating the logo, you know, just like a little refresh because, you know, the old one didn't really hold up well in print.
Modernizing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, okay, sure. Yeah, I can do that. And then Megan had an idea for Easton Bacon Fest. And I was like, I like bacon. She was like, do you want to help me out with some, you know, start a campaign and branding? And I said, yeah, let's do that. So Kim Kmetz was also a part of that as well. But my direct report was Megan. So together we built, you know, all the campaign assets, the logo, the website, festival map, gosh, T-shirts, swag items, just
everything that goes into
it. Everything that goes into it. And the first year was okay. The second year was better than the last. The third year was 70,000 people in Easton.
Yeah.
And then up from there.
And then it's one of the larger festivals in the Lehigh Valley, sure.
But that was really fun. That was my first logo I created that was trademarked.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
That's a nice thing to hang your hat on.
Right?
Yeah. Well, it's clear that you have a lot of pride within what you've been able to do and make an impact in the community revitalization in Easton. And we're going to jump a little bit more back into that here in the second segment. I'm here with Sarah Clark, Lewis Holzman on Young Valley Leaders, and we'll be right back.
Are you saying out with the old, in with the new when it comes to your old car? WDIY's vehicle donation program will turn your ride into your favorite programs on Lehigh Valley Public Radio. The towing is free, all the paperwork is taken care of, and your gift is tax deductible. For more information, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
All right, and we're back here. Sarah Clark, Kudu Creative, Easton Revitalization, not single-handedly, but certainly initially with a small group of like-minded individuals that's figured out how to make it happen over the last 15 years, turning the narrative of what Easton once was into now such a thriving downtown and urban center. Sarah, would love to continue on that conversation. I mean, Bacon Fest, obviously such a huge success. Would love to learn a little bit more about the depths of what that's done for Easton and how you continue to make an impact from a creative standpoint, but also working with what I assume is a little bit of a larger team now as the years have grown on to just continue keeping this pulse with all of the restaurants, all of the boutiques. And it's certainly not the only festival that happens in Easton now either.
No, not at all. It is the city of festivals, I guess. But yeah, like you said, like-minded individuals is really what it takes to move the needle. And it's a grassroots community. So that's how Easton really is prolific and built themselves back up to where they are today. Another project that I would like to call out is working with the city of Easton. It was towards the end of 2016, beginning of 2017, the city of Easton was looking to do a rebrand. Mike Drabenstadt, him and I worked together on rebranding the city of Easton. I was the design hat and he was the messaging hat. And I really love how he honed the messaging. And this didn't come from us, you know, this came from community meetings. Mike did interviews and also gathered data from real people that lived in Easton. So all the information that we were using for messaging and branding came from the people. And he asked some really good questions. And the conversation, as I was listening, was just fruitful, right? So I think with that information, it helped me do my job better because it was very easy for me to visualize what this was.
And they're complementary components, right? So many people, when they think of branding, they first think of visual components of branding. But the messaging, the positioning, and the verbal identity in which is associated with that brand that is actually spoke about or read, then obviously intersects with that visual identity is how it actually comes to life, like collectively in both of those parts. So it's cool that you're able to see that happen. I'm sure you see it happen all the time in what you do, but just – you know, in real time with your community, with that community input, it's pretty special.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's rooted in authenticity too, in truth, right? So it's not just aspirational. There's a little bit of aspiration to it, but it has to be it has to be rooted in truth. And Mike got to the bottom of it.
So what was that process like doing that for a city, though? Are we talking like hundreds of people that he's interviewing? Is this like a committee that's put together? Like how do you go about that?
What we did was we had an open forum for residents, and it was at the top floor of the Nurture Nature Center. Cool. And so Mike facilitated it. He gave everybody sticky notes, and we had different categories around the room. So he got them up walking, talking with one another.
Important. And then,
absolutely. Mike is amazing, but essentially he's a glorified translator, right? So as he's facilitating these discussions and small group studies, he was always clarifying, did I hear this right? And then if people had conflicting or different perspectives or point of views, he would ask them to elaborate a little bit more. And what I really like that is because it starts to dive in a little bit deeper, right? We have most of the room saying the same thing, but it's where those different perspectives intersect is where you can find that gold. And then also having them elaborate, because there's intricacies that they might be talking about that they don't, that one person might not understand. So really, it's where you can get your unique positioning from.
Truly a community effort, too. I mean, in a lot of those types of exercises, it's community in the sense of whoever your stakeholders might be. But here, when we're talking about a city and a governing body and the actual Estonians that are part of making this happen, I mean, it's so close and personal. You can't not get that feedback.
Oh, yes. And, you know, it was our mayor, Sal Panto, and city council that really allowed us to do our job. They gave us guidance, but also the freedom to, you know, understand all the different aspects and all the different perspectives to put them together. So there's not only the perspective of the stakeholders, thus being, you know, city council, but it's also we interviewed the community as well. So just marrying all those different perspectives was really great. Quite the feat, I must say. But I really like Easton's unique positioning, right? So we established it as the creative community. And that's how Easton stands apart from Bethlehem and Allentown. I mean, I love going to Bethlehem. I love Allentown. But we all have our own strengths.
Yep.
And I would love it if we all were a little less balkanized and a little bit more, you know, free-flowing, like the valley as a whole.
Sure.
So I think ABE's different perspectives and unique positioning really complement one another. I mean, the population has increased incredibly since 2020.
Yeah.
I think we're doing something right,
I think you're hitting a nice stroke there with looking at it as one Lehigh Valley. I mean, there's obviously individual components in, you know, just how governments run within the municipalities and the boroughs outside of it, but the strength of our region is together rather individual pieces. Being able to pull that forward and that identity, I think is what we're seeing more and more happen with, you know, things like Discover Lehigh Valley and the Lehigh Valley Economic Development Corporation and being able to bridge those gaps. And it's people like yourself that are coming in from the outside that are seeing that perspective and looking at it as one whole versus some of folks that have been here for decades and have allegiances to like the specific area that they grew up in. It's an exciting time as the valley continues to pulse and, to your point, grow, not in just residents here, but employment across every sector, really.
Yeah, Hearst Publishing moved to Easton a few years ago, I think during COVID, 2020.
Yep.
I mean, right there, how many magazines, you know, do they oversee? There's Popular Mechanics, Runner's World, Women's Health, Men's Health. They employ creative writers.
Yeah.
They employ graphic designers. They employ digital people. They employ videographers. So
super thankful that they stayed in Easton.
I know.
I mean, it was obviously a big change for a lot in the Valley when they bought Rodale and moved things from Emmaus, but then just being able to keep the brands and keep a lot of those employment opportunities here in the Valley for such a leading publisher is so critical to our local economy and to local creative economy.
Agreed. And it brought in a lot of people from elsewhere too to move to Easton.
And Easton has a unique piece of like moving from elsewhere because it's right next to New Jersey and the closest to New York, that certainly the Holy Valley is has some level of transient and commuter aspect to it. But because of its proximity, literally right across the water, right across the bridge, you know, coming from Allentown, that's an additional half hour. So there is definitely a desire for those that are making that trek, whether it's weekly or more regularly, whatever that looks like, to be in Easton or in that general area and maybe not paying the New York and New Jersey taxes, but still being right there.
Yeah, and they get access to fresh local foods at the Easton Farmers Market.
An incredible market. Talk about the things that have grown over the years. I mean, I think that's one of the original, like, true farmers markets here in the Lehigh Valley. It's been around for a good bit of time now. I don't know the exact amount of years, but it's huge. I was there last summer, and I was like, oh, my God, I didn't realize how big this has gotten.
Yeah, I can't wait for Strawberry Day. Come on, spring.
Talking about things that you can't wait for, and you talked about some past projects. Are there any upcoming projects that you're able to speak of or are excited about, and whether that is directly within your work or creative, or it could be something personal, anything that you're looking forward to?
Well, yeah, I'm really happy about a podcast that we recently launched with Monroe County. Mm. So we're doing a campaign for the opioid remediation program.
Okay.
The name of the campaign is called Fight Fentanyl. It is obviously an awareness campaign.
Sure.
It's overdose prevention, right? I'm sure you've heard the opioid crisis is affecting...
For years.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's really unfortunate. It tears families and communities apart and turns them into ghost towns.
Yep.
So we created a podcast recently that I'm very excited about. Number one, because it was the first podcast series that I helped produce and, you know, manage and write. The host, Abby Weiss, she's a young woman that just graduated from Moravian University with a public health degree. She tells her story of how fentanyl had affected her life. Unfortunately, she lost her father to an opioid overdose in her teen years. Mm. Her mother has been her right-hand woman, a huge supporter all throughout, you know, when her father was living with the substance use disorder and then even after. And she has really made it a part of her life to advocate for people getting into treatment and recovery. And so once I interviewed her, I thought that she would be the best host to tell that story, having lived it.
Mm-hmm.
And then also with her public health degree, knowing how to talk about it, right?
Sure.
And so we have a series of 7 episodes, and they range from everybody in the community that has a certain touch point to help other people. So the first episode is about her and her mother and their journey and firsthand accounts about, you know, how they made it through. And if the listeners have any questions, you know, it might help them understand what their experience was and maybe get some ideas. And then we've interviewed people from the substance use disorder department from a local hospital. We also interviewed people from Northbound Company, which is a treatment recovery facility. Carbon Monroe Pike Drug and Alcohol Commission. So each of these aspects of interviews touched on a different point of how to get help or certain awareness or just hearing somebody's story that's been there and has done that, that might resonate with other people.
You're able to hit all the points of kind of that circle of support, but also the community that's involved there for better or for worse, that's there to support you, whether you're going through it yourself or you have a family or a friend member.
Yeah, and I really like the delivery of a podcast too, because unfortunately we're fighting the stigma of substance abuse disorder, which I don't think there should be a stigma. When you're ready for help, there is help available.
Yep.
No questions asked, no stigma, you know? And I feel like the podcast is a little bit more personal and private for someone who might be exploring different options or just need to hear other people's stories that went through the programs, or even families. There's families that struggle with keeping the family together when a family member is struggling with substance use disorder and their support for them as well. So it really kind of looks at the community holistically to make sure that everybody has an outlet or resources to, you know, improve their quality of life when they're ready.
That's incredible. Thank you for bringing that project forward and helping to bring that to life in general for our community and the community at large up in Monroe and Pike. And
our neighbors.
Our neighbors, yeah. I mean, it's Lehigh Valley, Monroe, Pike, Pennsylvania, anywhere in the United States. It's a story that's going to resonate because it's happening and it has been happening all over. So.
And then I would say on a smaller scale, so my dental hygienist called me couple years ago and said, my husband and I are quitting our job and we want to open up a coffee trailer.
Cool.
And I said, well, what do you mean by a coffee trailer? She goes, well, we don't really want to do a brick and mortar right now, but we would like to go to different locations and sell coffee. And so I said, okay, tell me a little bit more. And like how you would like to frame this. What's the vibes you're looking for? Who's your target audience? So I went through all that with her. And once again, she gave us all creative freedom. So we designed their trailer wrap and their logo. My team and I submitted the logo and the branding assets to the American Advertising Federation, our local chapter here in the Lehigh Valley, and we won an Addy.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And it's just, it's funny because you have that one in particular. It's just funny to see the
impact.
The impact and also just the dichotomy of a very small startup, husband and wife thing, very small, small budget. And mm-hmm. then like a larger budget, whether it be like a city or a county, both having a huge impact, but just the difference of it. You know, when you make impact, both little and small, it all feels good. And at the end of the day, if I'm making my clients happy and we're, you know, hitting the target, then, you know, it just fulfills me. So
that's what counts.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we are headed near time here, but I do want to give you an opportunity to share how people can find either you or Kudu, and if you have any final thoughts or comments for every leader that may be listening in.
You can find Kudu at wearekudu.com. That's wearekudu.com. You can also find us on LinkedIn and all the socials. And I think if I could leave one piece with you, never stop creating, never stop innovating. As a creative, design is never finished. As an organization, you have new business goals every year. And the average brand lasts about 5 to 10 years, 10 years being like a real stretch.
Mm-hmm.
But it's important to revisit your business plan. And does your messaging reflect that?
Love it. I love it. Sarah, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you, Lewis. I appreciate it.
Until the next time, this is Lewis Holzman here with Sarah Clark on Young Valley Leaders, and we'll catch you next month.